What you just said?
No.
So, Julia graciously agreed to try to resurrect this poster that we had worked on a couple of years ago to present, but it's not in any condition, it's not in a presentable condition yet.
But,
yeah, it is. It's, 2 years ago, this group, well, actually, Anna, who's not here, was the only person, current member, who was a member of that group. We coded mean-length utterances of caregivers telling stories to their children, 3 to 5 year old children. And the hypothesis was that the greater the depression in the mothers, the smaller the mean-length utterances in the sentences they tell, and the less likely the children were to acquire theory of mind abilities. So there was a mediational model that we were going to test. But by the end of the school year, when it was time for me to get the data so I could actually run the analyses and get the poster made, the data were in no shape whatsoever to analyze the data. And so I mothballed it, brought it out of hiding this past summer with the help of Julia and a upper-level student. Her name is Michelle Fanciolo. She's actually on an internship right now. The three of us sat in my apartment trying to figure out ID numbers with coded data, and we made some progress. We made a lot of progress. There she is.
I gotta step it off and I gotta go. I'm so late.
We're talking about the mean length utterances poster. Do you remember that?
Yes.
2 years ago?
Yeah, I even saw their competition.
I was saying you were the only member of that team who's still here.
Because I love you guys so much. This is all Angel. I'm compared to him. Okay. If I haven't.
Why, there should be more?
Look how many there are.
Yeah, it's a lot.
He's been hoarding.
He's a hoarder.
Can you sign this? Yeah, every time he like open his drawer and he's like, I gotta get these back.
Oh wait, Anna, sorry. This is for you.
You have a
this
pen?
This is for me. Oh, sorry.
Thanks.
Wait, this is for what? This is mine.
I just gave you one?
Yeah.
What did I just give you there?
What I gave you back.
Oh, sorry. Oh, thanks, okay. Fluster.
Here you go.
Yes. Do you think you're in process with just?
Are you recording me?
Yes.
Can I just see if I gave you?
I am going to upload it, and you can find out exactly what I told
you.
Previously?
Well, my website has a different address
one
now
there,
from
two
previous
two
years,
two
but
two
I gave you the.
Oh, you
email
emailed
address.
Me? That's not great.
Okay, that's
oh,
it.
Oh, okay, yeah, I did.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming in.
Bye. Good meeting.
Which is
it? It's a packed house today.
Oh, packed house, yes. So, so that poster. We did some real good work on it, right, and figuring out the conflicts, right, Julia?
It's like we did such good work on it, but it's still so bad.
So far away.
And it's just like I have to work on this other one first, so I haven't looked at it in a
no,
while.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
I know.
But I was just telling people who want to volunteer, Julia, who want to volunteer,
oh.
Julia, on this project, that she has her hands full. So she's not a worthy candidate for
wait,
a new poster.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to Sarah.
Oh, sorry. I kept hearing Julia. So
she had volunteered
oh,
you
so
to start a new
me.
Project.
I got stuff to do, guys. So.
But not only is she preparing a poster from last year, she has work to do on a poster from 2 years ago that, as I was explaining, has a lot of fleas. So she's trying to... she's the exterminator, trying to eradicate the fleas from that two-year-old poster. Yes, I won't go into detail why that poster is in such disarray, but it's very disappointing. And I have faith in Julie that she's going to figure it out and get it back on track. But that means that she's out of the running as far as taking the lead on a new poster. But if anybody wants to do something for this coming year, namely August of 2017, the deadline for submission for APA posters is December 1st. Just want to let people know. All right. So moving right along, we're gonna end about 15 minutes early. We're gonna end about 5:45 because those of us who belong to the LIU campus are going to some festivities in another part of campus called Doctoberfest. And I may or may not sing at Doctoberfest. I don't know.
You weren't there last year.
I was not. So you missed out.
Okay.
But for those of you who are not LIU students, I guess you could go, but you have to pay $20 to get in the door.
I mean, we all paid $20.
Yeah.
I
paid $20 too. Actually, I paid $60. So, because my wife and my Ugandan translator, who's here visiting, is also coming. I said my wife. You didn't hear? Baby doesn't count.
I like how you knew I was going to say, and baby. Okay.
Baby doesn't count. My daughter's coming too. So if you went, you would get to see her also. So it's $20, and it's from, 5:30 to 8 or 8:30? 8:30, okay. And what is it, just drinking and singing, basically? Is that it?
And eating.
Oh, and eating, right.
And eating.
It's good. So, those are all my announcements. Anybody else have any other announcements? Okay, as we're learning this, I guess 2 weeks ago I had asked you to come in with questions about specific items that we could talk about or I could answer questions because I figured, I made a calculation 2 weeks ago that if we were to review all 100 items at the same pace that we were doing, it'd take us 5 weeks just to review the items. That's without even looking at video. So what I thought we would do is review only those items that you have questions about from 2 weeks ago. You guys remember, right, that I had asked for specific questions? And then next week, maybe we can look at some video and actually get into learning the code. Does that sound reasonable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I'm all ears. Do, 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 do.
So,
Item 22. Yes.
Child expresses fear of being punished or threatened. It's kind of unclear to me whether that expectation is of like some inordinate punishment. It says pain, injury, danger, harm, or evil. So does that mean like an expectation of sort of like intense punishment versus like my mom is going to yell at me?
I think yelling would be considered punishment.
Okay.
Yeah. It's punished or that someone or something is a potential source.
I mean, when someone yells at me, like my wife, that's a source of pain for me. When you get yelled at in supervision, isn't that a source of pain for you?
All those times.
How's that sound?
Yeah, I was just thrown off by the sort of the last part of like danger, harm, or evil.
Right. It sounds really quite. It sounds more extreme than it needs to be.
Okay.
But of course, you know, you're rating this in 9 levels.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the way that you know evil. Yeah, that were really true. You put it in pile 9.
That would be like if the kid was like talking about, you know, like, oh, the devil is going to, you know, like something evil. But it,
well, that go in pile 9. That would be pretty significant, salient characteristic of the session. But if the child says, I'm afraid my mom's going to yell at me, maybe pile 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But it also depends on the arrangement of all the other, the, you know,
right.
Every item is rated in relation to all the other items too. Right. So.
And just to clarify from last week, if they say something like the devil's going to get me, it would be salient unless the therapist didn't acknowledge it, and then it wouldn't be characteristic.
It says child expresses fears.
Okay, so that's independent of whether or not the therapist acknowledges.
Yeah, because this is expresses verbally or in play. So uncharacteristic.
Because I remember the example of like if the child like wets himself but is not acknowledged, then it's uncharacteristic.
Right, but look at the uncharacteristic direction. It's uncharacteristic if the child expresses expectation of being praised or protected. So this is kind of like on a continuum from punishment to praise. So if you were to follow that rule with this item, you wouldn't put a kid who expresses fear of being punished without a therapist's acknowledgement in the same pile as a kid
right.
who is expressing the expectation that he's going to be praised or protected.
Okay.
That wouldn't make any sense logically. So that rule doesn't apply to items such as this one. Gina.
This is actually a similar question. On item 20, child is provocative, challenges the therapist or rules and boundaries of the therapy hour. This one seems to be like a more binary one because the uncharacteristic direction just says if child appears not to engage the therapist in an emotionally provocative way or does not challenge the bounds of the therapy. So in this case, it would just be like it's characteristic if it happens, it's uncharacteristic if it doesn't happen. Versus the other ones where it's like, if it doesn't happen, then it's neutral and it's in the middle because it just didn't occur. But this one seems to be saying
right.
something different.
Yes.
So is that right for this specific
yes.
item?
I think, you know, like, rather than thinking, like, I get what you're saying by binary, but maybe, like, another way to think about it is, like, if the child does, you know, does try to stretch the hour or does, you know, it depends on like the salience of what it is. Cause like if they do it, it doesn't automatically mean it's going to be a 9. They might just be like, oh, I want to stay. And then leave fine. And that would probably go in a lower pile. But if it was something like, I'm not leaving, I'm not leaving, I'm not leaving, you can't make me leave. Like that would be placed higher.
Sort of see what I'm saying?
Right. I'm just saying that in other examples we talk about, it's like, characteristic when it happens and it's acknowledged, uncharacteristic when it happens and it's not acknowledged, and if it doesn't occur, then it's in the middle because it just is not salient to this session at all. However, this specific item, it is listing in the uncharacteristic direction. It's saying, oh,
yeah.
it doesn't happen to go in that direction, which is different than the other examples that we've been talking about. So that was like
mm-hmm.
the question. Like, and for some of these, then it seems that there are it's not always that
absolutely
way.
That's why I've emphasized from day one when you actually begin coding a video, you need to read not only the descriptor, right, but also the characteristic paragraph underneath
right.
and the uncharacteristic paragraph underneath, because those are going to give you clues
mm-hmm.
about where the item belongs in which pile.
I have a question for you, because sometimes when we've seen a couple of items that are like, put it uncharacteristic if they don't do it, but and you've said on some, not for us. For us, if it's not apparent, we're just going to put it in 5.
If it's not applicable to the session.
So what if the child just doesn't challenge bounds in therapy? You know, the therapist is like, time to go. This is telling us, put that in pile 1. Are you telling us put it in pile 5?
I think for the, you know, when Celeste made these items, I can just tell you right now, she wasn't thinking about this idea about putting it in pile 1. If the issue is manifest in the session, but the therapist doesn't talk about it and remains undiagnosed
mm-hmm.
or unidentified.
Yeah.
So I think for this one, you know, like let's say a kid is completely compliant.
Right.
Would you want to place this in the uncharacteristic direction? Child appears not to engage the therapist in an emotionally provocative way or does not challenge the bounds of the therapy. I think if the child is just so good and just overly compliant and, you know, pulls out the chair for the therapist to sit down. And, huh?
Mine.
Okay, like your patient. You know, then it's sailing. It really strikes you that this kid is trying so hard not to be provocative. Then it would go in pile one. But if the kid is just like your average typical kid, you know, I would put it in pile five. I don't know if that helps.
It worries me a little bit because
yeah.
How do you be reliable with everybody else?
That's why we're meeting.
That's what we're doing. We decide together.
We decide. We're the final arbiters in how we want to code data.
So I suppose I understand what you're saying, like if it's completely compliant and then if it's not applicable.
But if it's saliently compliant,
right.
So like it's so stunning in this session that it deserves an extreme rating, then you put it in one or
right,
two.
So I understand that. So then wherever would like a three be? You know, what would a example of something that would fall in category three? Because I understand the difference between one and five.
So the patient comes and says, "My Julia, you look nice today." I mean, he's not being. He did.
She. Other one.
Oh. Yeah.
I didn't tell you about that. But maybe
no.
Uncomfortable.
You want to share the example?
Okay, I went to get my patient from the waiting.
Now this is an adult patient.
This is an adult, and we.
But still, same idea.
We were. I was like walking her upstairs to my office, and she was like, "Wow, Julia, you look really pretty today." And I was like...
Now, is she being provocative? Just the opposite, right?
It's a little provocative.
I know, I feel like...
You think so?
Like it was a little provocative.
I mean, it's hard to tell without, like, the
tone of voice
or
expression.
Well, I mean, like, I think she was really just, like, trying to be nice, which is why I can bring it up in supervision.
She's not challenging you, right?
No.
She's not
there.
Violating any boundaries. She's not.
Not there. I didn't tell you another thing that she did that.
Okay.
Tell you later.
Try to contain yourself.
I can't contain myself.
So, that might be a three.
Okay. I guess I'm just really having trouble with understanding where to put things because I don't understand how we're defining provocative here. And I want to make sure that when I'm doing it, I'm getting it right, you know?
A child seems to behave or speak in a manner aimed at provoking the therapist or challenging the apparent rules and boundaries of the therapy hour.
Right. So that's... But that's
so I had a kid. I had a kid get up on a table I had in my office and threaten to jump off the table.
That's pretty provocative.
That would be a nine.
Right, but she said that's obvious. That's an obvious one.
Well, right, and the more obvious it is, the more likely it's going to go in an extreme pile.
Right.
So if it ends up in like a three, it's usually, you know, it's like most of the time this is going to be in the middle with like a regular kid. It's going to be in the middle, and when it moves, when I'm doing it, like between three and six, a lot of the time it's just like where things are related to each other.
Right,
you know,
so we pushed one
like,
way
I might put this in a five, but then have other things that are more salient for five, so it ends up in three or it ends up in four, you know?
Right, here's the problem with this whole conversation we're having, which I'm uneasy about. The reason I'm feeling uneasy is that I'm the one at fault here because I'm encouraging you to talk about specific items, but we're talking about these items in isolation from all the other items, and it's really not fair. You know, you say, where do you put that? What do I look for a three? I can't give you that answer because these items, this is the beauty and the frustration of QSORT methodology. You put these items in piles in relation to all the other items. It's not like a Likert scale.
Right.
Right? A Likert type scale, you have a question and you have from one to nine. Right? And you can circle any answer you want from one to nine, what you feel that is for that item. But that your answer to that item is not dependent on any of the other answers you provide on that questionnaire. You can put whatever you want. In fact, if you want to put nines for every single item on a questionnaire, you're welcome to do that in a Likert type scale. That's the problem because there's response biases. There's no response bias with the QSORT methodology because it's a forced choice format. So you have to put this, you have to think about all the other items simultaneously. I mean, in an ideal world, if your brain could do that, that's what you would do. Think of all the other items simultaneously as you're making a placement of a particular item, such as item 20. If it works out that it ends up in pile 3, that's where it ends up. It might end up in pile 4, pile 2. It really depends on the salience of the item in comparison with all the other items that you're rating, which happens to be 99 other ones. So I know it would feel more comforting if I could identify like a specific behavior, set of behaviors to give you for this item, but what does a 3 look like? What does a 4 look like? And when you're coding with other coding systems have those kinds of manuals where like, okay, a 3 equals this, a 4 equals this. I once trained a team, this is way back in my postdoc days, I trained a team on an aggression coding system for coding the attachment story completion task. Okay, it was an aggression coding system, and there were a number of items, and they were Likert type scale. And we actually developed rules within the group to identify what specifically to look for each anchor point of the code for each item. And, you know, the code book got quite large, but reliability was really good, and we got published on that because we were very clear about how to define specific anchor points. Unfortunately, with QSort methodology, I can't do that. It's much more subjective in that sense. And as Julia will tell you, it's much more difficult to establish reliability using a QSort methodology. That's why in most coding systems, the threshold for reliability is 0.8. With QSort methodology, it's 0.7. You're knocking it down a whole tenth of a correlation because of magnitude of correlation because of the difficulties inherent in doing QSorting. I mean, Julia is working feverishly on another project that we're trying to present in a couple of weeks at Berkeley, and with a guy who was a member of the team last year, Angel, actually Anna's boyfriend, and he was here a couple of weeks ago. You know, it's tough. They're actually recoding.
Low reliability
videos, and you know it's a slog, right?
Yeah.
So I don't envy your difficulties here in trying to wrap your head around this QSort methodology. It's very difficult, but I think the benefits outweigh the liabilities. Clearly, I feel that way. I've invested my whole career in QSort methodology. So, and Ariel, did I pronounce it right?
Mm-hmm.
Is actually completing her dissertation using the CPQ. So she believes in it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are three of us in the room who believe in it.
You said you've been working with the QSort since 1992.
Two.
And I said, oh, that's funny, that's the year I was born.
Let's show you how old I am. So I don't know if that
helps
chime
in. Obviously, the thing that helped was that the more salient items will help put it in its place. So that
basically. But that doesn't excuse us from really understanding the meaning of these items. I really need you guys to understand what the meaning is. So when you ask the question like, what does provocative mean? That's the kind of question that I feel equipped to answer. Not, well, what's pile 3 look like for this item? I can't answer that question. But I can answer you what provocative means through like extreme examples. Like this kid getting up on my table, which is a fairly high table. He was only 6 and saying, I'm going to jump off. I caught him. No, I'm just kidding.
Not in the realm of the
I said, let's get off the table. Let's talk about this. And so he did. He complied. But it was frightening for me at the time, as you might imagine. That's provocative. I had another kid, different kid, just pull his pants down in session. He was also 6. And, you know, that's provocative in a different way, but that's still very provocative. And fortunately, I just said, please put your pants back up. Very matter-of-fact manner. And he pulled them right back up. So those kinds of examples don't happen a whole lot. And that's why they come to mind so readily for me, because it's very unusual. But because they're so salient, You know, if I were coding those sessions where those two sets of behaviors occurred, you know, most likely item 20 would be in pile 9. I have very little doubt because it's the only thing I remember about those two sessions.
Yeah, no, so I totally understand what you're saying, and I understand why it would have, like, less reliability, but I guess, like, what I'm having trouble is that it seems like a lot of these items have to do with, like, if something is, like, super salient or not super salient, you know? And then I mean, I don't know this because I haven't done it yet, but I envision, like, I'd have trouble deciding where, like, this item would go in relation to the item, for example, about, like, if they were, like, sexual or something.
Right.
And if that didn't happen, I wouldn't know, I suppose, like, if I had to move one to another pile, which one it would be if it wasn't.
Well, it's all about sailing, so sexual issues are discussed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So no sexual issues are discussed, typically, that go in pile 5. But if, let's say this little boy, well, he pulled down his pants, okay? Now, let's say I didn't say anything, which would be really horrible on my part. Let's say I didn't say a word, and the rest of the session were conducted with his pants down. I mean, it's a ridiculous example, but for the sake of, you know, didactic purposes, let's go with that.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't say anything, it's a very salient issue that he pulled his pants down. So that would go in pile 1.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's just hard to talk about this when we don't have, like, a session in mind, because there is always going to be something you can look at, you know?
I promise you we are going to watch video next week.
Yeah. No, but I think that's why I'm nitpicking now, because I'm finding it difficult when I think about each individual item and not, like, the interplay of all of them, I suppose.
Right. No, it's inherently difficult because I'm, by giving you this exercise, let's go through the items and talk about them, I'm treating them as if they're Likert-type scale items, and they're really not.
Yeah.
They're not at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different approach. It's a totally different methodology.
Yeah.
This methodology is less than 100 years old. Can you believe that? It was first published in 1936 by a guy named Stevenson. And you'll probably put that in your dissertation, Ariel. Stevenson's work. He was a statistician in the 30s.
I didn't really talk about that.
No?
I don't think he's going to make it in.
Oh! It's very sad.
I'm only going as far back as Jones.
Oh, really? Okay, so Jack Block is not going to make an appearance? Okay. All right, so your dissertation is going to be nice and tight.
Right?
It's going to be very concise, like almost like a journal article.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I'm not quite that short, but yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So it's a, you know, in the whole scheme of things, it's a relatively recent methodology. It hasn't been around as long as some of the others, like Likert-type scaling and all that stuff. So any other items that merit our attention? Yes, Amanda.
So item 40.
Item 40.
Is that the child communicates without affect. And then item 56 is that the child is distant from his or her feelings. So I was just looking at, like, so item 40 would be solely, like, in their, I don't know, like, verbal responses? Or could it be, like, nonverbal communication?
Well, it leaves some wiggle room here. If you look, speaks or presents information. I guess if you're signing.
I was going to be playing.
Playing.
Or gesturing.
But how do you present information? How do you play in a monotone or affectless manner? I guess, were you looking at facial expression?
I was thinking affect when I said playing, but I guess you could play in a child could. When in playing and speaking.
So just like...
Right, yeah.
With the little boy that we watch, that we're doing, you know what I'm trying to say, little boy that we used last year.
Yes.
The little boy that we're doing a poster on, he kind of played in monotone tones sometimes.
It's got to be Matt.
It has to be. I'd be worried if it wasn't.
I told him in another life, he'd be a wonderful, like, opera singer.
Yeah.
He's got an incredible voice. He told me. He does voiceovers. Have you met him?
Yeah.
Yeah. So does that help with this? And then you mentioned the distant from affect. 56. 56.
I guess 56 seems more like a overarching distance, as opposed to 40 was like in like actions or like specific instances where there's communication with affect.
Yeah, and if you uncharacteristic here is particularly helpful, I think.
Yeah.
So you put this in uncharacteristic direction if there's a balance in affect.
Right.
So there might be periods of time where there are like little outbursts of joy, anger, sadness, and but then there are periods of time when the child is more even.
Right, okay. Then I could.
So there's more variability. This means that there's just not much variability at all. I'm supervising a student right now, the brother of your patient, who in session this week, he's 12, he's going to be 13 tomorrow or today?
Tomorrow.
Just sat nonchalant, didn't answer any questions. Actually wrote on a, so the student gave him a symptom questionnaire to fill out, and he calmly took it, wrote on it.
No, that's not what he first did.
Huh?
First one he threw through the window.
Oh, okay. All right.
No.
So we'll start off more aggressive than that.
Well, see, that ruins the example.
Oh, sorry. Just
let me give the example the way I want to give it.
Sorry. Forget what I said.
So he casually wrote something on the symptom questionnaire and gave it back to the student. And said, fuck you. So, but very, very nonchalant, very indifferent, you know, didn't answer any questions, didn't seem to be really that bothered. That's distant from his feelings. And he's angry.
Right.
He wrote, fuck you. And that tells me he's angry. But
he's distant because
he's distant from his feelings.
Right.
His actions don't betray or don't reflect what he's obviously thinking.
Yeah. Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So there's a disconnect between what he's really feeling, what he's portraying to you, the therapist.
Right. Got it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin it.
See, because if he showed his anger, then you'd have to lower
like
this a little bit.
Very nonchalant. It was. He did it nonchalantly.
Oh, he did it. Okay,
yeah,
so even
like
that was nonchalant.
He like pushed it through, you know, like the sliding glass.
Yes, I do know.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry.
So, any other items that you'd like me to discuss? That's what everybody said 2 weeks ago, but I did want to give people one more chance to discuss specific items.
What? I don't even really know what question I'm asking. You're going to have a video for next week that
yes.
we're coding in advance or that we're going to watch here?
No, we're going to watch in vivo.
Okay.
Would you like that?
Yeah. It's helpful when we do that in Jeff Nick's comments.
But, you know, I want us to be on the same page with these items before we go into that kind of training.
I'm just thinking about, like, the logistics of it. So when you watch it, I mean, I'm sure we'll get more familiar with the items as we go, but I imagine myself, like, not remembering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, like, you start with the ones that are most salient, and then...
Well, so you know you'll have the cards, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you
I gave out all the cards, right?
No.
You guys don't have cards yet?
We gave the manuals, but not the cards.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So I think, you know, it's very similar to the other sort
you
that you
cards,
guys did.
Right?
So you put it in the three piles, and then you divide it further into three piles. So it's like, you don't really forget. You know, it's like when you're doing the first three piles, it's okay if it's a little off.
So you watch, like, you would watch the entire session?
Oh, yeah.
Take notes. Oh, take notes. Okay, I forgot that word. And then, do you rewatch? Do you find that you go back and rewatch?
I don't, unless I thought something was, like, really important and I completely forgot it. But usually, like, what I do is, like, I'll watch, take notes, and then I'll have, like, my computer on the floor with my notes and sort right next to my computer on the floor, and then I'll, like, be looking back and forth.
What we'll do next week is I have a video prepared. It's already been coded, and I know the reliability and have all that stuff, the correct answers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll do is we'll watch. We have an hour and 15 minutes, right? So the video will be 45 minutes. What we'll do is we'll watch the whole thing together as a group, 45 minutes. And I'll stop at various times and maybe make comments, and we can talk for various times. We'll talk through the video, and then you'll go home and you'll cue sort it and send me the ratings. Does that sound reasonable? And then the following week, I'll come back with all of your ratings posted.
It's really fun when he does that, not shaming at all.
He's not supposed to be shaming.
Do you want to present it in the same way that we do it in class?
Exactly the same way.
And can you send me that Excel?
So we need directions on how to do that next week, because people haven't done that.
Yeah, well,
yeah, okay.
I'll go over that.
Because I've got my makeup lab.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
You just use the numbers that are, like, pre-populated in Excel, and, like, as a card number, and then in the very first column next to it, you write which pile.
Oh, great.
So I'm just making notes to myself here. Actually, I mean, well, did you listen to that lecture?
I did, but I couldn't see the Excel that you were talking about
in
the lecture. But Lily just explained it to me. It makes sense.
You want to show her on the whiteboard?
Oh, I just do. I don't think I
mean, I think I get it. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah, you just use the Excel numbers as a card number, and you put the pile number.
So, like,
yeah.
In Excel... There's a column that's built into Excel. It's like this.
It's
helpful to run, like, if you guys know how to, like, count. So, like, you can, like, count the number of ones and, like, make sure that that's actually five.
Sort
and count the number of twos.
Yeah, you can sort the data.
You do it
in a different column.
In a different column. Like, you'll want to do it, like, count if, you know, that command equals count if, and then put the range in. It's okay if you don't want to do that.
Or
you
can just
sort
by
the numbers
on the
side.
Or,
okay.
You can do it that way too. It's
awesome.
So these are the items, and then the pile number corresponds. Like, this might be pile 9, pile 7, pile 2, pile 9, pile 3, pile 4, pile 7, pile 6, pile 2, pile 1, pile 8. Right, all the way to 100.
Mm-hmm.
You got that? Have you done any Q sorting ever? Or
no.
So this is new to you?
Oh,
okay. All right. Right. So I'm going to give you the assignment of listening to the first lecture.
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. So was that helpful? Did you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was the one before the last one, right?
So you mean your class? Is that what you mean?
Oh, you mean your class.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I go over the total mechanics.
Your lab.
No. The total mechanics
lab.
Of Q sorting. It's in, if you go to my website.
Oh, yeah.
And you go under courses.
Okay.
And the first course that will pop up when you hover over courses is developmental psychology. Click on developmental psychology and then click on podcast 1,
okay.
The first podcast, and listen to that. And just you know, skip through the stuff that, you know, everybody's introducing themselves in the first class, but skip to the point where I start talking about the Q-sort.
Okay.
And I go over, I lay out all the mechanics, all the tricks of actually Q-sorting, and if you have questions, just email me and I'll try to answer them just individually.
Okay.
All right? But, so then when you do the Q-sort, and also in the manual, which you have a copy of, it also describes how to actually do the Q-sorting. So once you have that and you have your ratings, then you put the ratings in an Excel file like this and email it to me. Make sure that your name is part of the file name, so I know who's I'm going to be getting a lot of people coming in, and I'm going to be downloading them, and then I'll need to know whose name it is.
Are we going to do like week one or like video one?
Practice one. Practice one. All right, does that make sense?
So that Excel file, has anyone put the item, text into an Excel so that while we do that, you can know?
Well, that's what Julia was talking about, I think.
No. Write in the card.
Yeah, I mean,
now, if you need, if you find this helpful, I have little coding sheets. You guys find that? Would you guys find that helpful?
To
hard copy?
Yeah.
Cards,
yeah. The coding sheet where you can write in the item numbers in the little boxes under each pile.
I use that.
Is it the same as the one that we have?
Yeah.
We use it.
I use that.
So,
I want to show you guys.
I believe I have a copy of that on my website.
It's the same speed because I tested them when I was growing up. It's not the speed of entering it, it's the speed so that I sort each pile so that it counts in order, so that when I'm then transferring it into the 1, 2, into the numbers, I can just go in sequential order. And there's no scrolling up and down, it's just straight.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Oh, here we go. So if you go into my website, well, first let me show you what you need to do to listen to this podcast. You go to the developmental psychology. And it's podcast one, all right? So then to go to the CPQ coding team, that's what we are, you go to more, and then you go to CPQ coding team, and, or maybe not, just go to CPQ coding team. And right here, if you click on this,
This is a new website.
It is. Patrick, help me with it. So you click here for the coding sheet, and if you just print this out, and there it is.
Wait, so Julia, are you saying you don't do this stuff?
What?
I told you what I do.
Because you lay them out.
So no, what I do is I made that exact thing in Excel, and I enter it straight into, I call it a pyramid. That's just what I call it. So I've made the pyramid on it. And I enter it straight into my computer. It basically looks exactly like that in the computer. But then what I do is I sort each pile on Excel to count sequentially. It puts it in numerical order. So then when you go and enter it, you don't have to be looking back. You see pile one is 27, But so
you want to email that to everybody?
Sure, I can email one of the... But
you have a template, right?
It requires a little bit of
manual, tweaking once you open it.
It's not automatic. There's something to do. I could show you guys right now what it is that I do, but if I just send you guys the document,
You want to show people interested or?
Yeah.
You want to see?
I mean, it saves people time. I'm all for it.
Would you want to show us
October week?
Okay, we can move it in. Whatever you guys want.
That's what you want.
$20 worth of water. All
right.
They don't want to do it.
I think it would be a great thing to do. I just wonder if next week would be more useful after we already practice. And that way everybody's not as work.
Is it possible to right direction?
Because I have it set up.
Oh, okay.
Is it possible right direction? So just like, or is it too?
No. I would rather show you guys than write out instructions for doing this because
okay.
It's really simple.
So next week.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
So you have access to the coding sheet. You have access to my podcast. You guys have a general sense of how to get me the data after next week. So it'll be due, let's say, Wednesday night. So this is two weeks from...
I don't know why I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Yes, right, but in two
But also,
yeah,
also
yeah.
What that means is that you're going to have to adjust slightly the transcription load for everybody so you can accommodate their coding. So maybe 1 hour less of transcribing. So we'll devote an hour to the queue sorting. Does that make sense? All right. Let's see.
Is that a... Oh.
Yes, the 16th.
I'm not going to be in lab that day.
You mean the 17th?
The 17th is the day I'm not going to be in lab.
What?
I'm flying to California.
I know. Oh, boy.
Just so you know.
Yeah. How many videos do you have left?
It's not going to happen. I wanted to talk to you about that. It's not going to happen. It's just not.
On your end or on
either? Either of us. It's not possible. It's not possible. So I have to get the poster printed.
Maybe we can just take it to Kinko's or something. And forget about LIU.
Okay.
And I'll pay for it.
I mean, if you wanna do that, then
yeah, I'd rather do that.
Get it done.
Yeah, I'd rather do that. I'm a perfectionist.
I know you are. But I know
I want it to be right.
I know we have plans for this besides this poster. So if it was just for this poster, but if you want it to be right, then that's
I want it to be right.
You have to do it the day before.
That's all right.
Possible.
No, that's okay. And I'll pay for the printing. All right. So I guess we're done, and we're gonna partay.
Yep.
Thank you for the invitation. I have
places to be. Places to be, people to see.
But thank you.
All right.
I was just
going to
go get Beatrice and walk over, but do you want to walk over with us?
Well, I'm waiting for Valida and Colin, so they're going to meet me in my office.
Okay, so do you want me to
come in?
Is it okay if I take Beatrice, or do you want to take Beatrice? I'm just going to see Beatrice all day.
You can take Beatrice.
Okay, I'll take Beatrice.
But she might want to see me.
You don't buy her pumpkin spice lattes. Or candy.
Oh, okay. No, I do other things. Hello.
We have questions.
Yes. Uh-oh.
Why uh-oh?
Well, because this is going to take a while.
Oh, no. It's very fast. I wrote notes. So you marked here that I should write for.
Yes.
But I think ABA you're supposed to spell.
Not with ages.
Not with ages.
Not with ages.
Okay. Could I find that? Not with age. Okay, that makes me feel better. And then this one. So Leon will spend time with most of his days alone. One, without stimulation. Two, and minimal emotional connection. So I think you are supposed to use the Oxford comma if you list three or more items. Because it's a listing rule. Spending most of his days alone.
Okay, so all right. So you're right. Then you need to add a preposition here, with.
And with. Okay. Got it. And I just wanted to make sure I don't understand what this means.
You misspelled the word.
Oh, so but what does...
That means that you transposed the two letters.
That's transposed.
Yes.
Yeah, that does happen to me. And then I only had one more question. So I know, don't worry, I know it's not a sociology paper, I promise. But so in Perry's assessment, he actually says that...
Right, but this is a treatment summary.
So
you're not writing a novel.
It's still too much.
Yeah.
See, yeah. I thought that I was too academic.
You pretend that you're writing this for like a supervisor at a clinic or a hospital setting.
Why don't I have two more questions actually? Because
if it's six or if it's six or more authors, you just put Brown et al.
But don't I have to do on the first one?
Nope. Not if it's six or more authors.
So really, even on the first one, even I have to. See, there's certain
believe
things.
Believe me, I know APA style.
Do you know, have you noticed that there are certain things that I have that are a relic from like the former APA?
Okay.
I think that's one of them. No, that's good. And then my last question, perhaps a relic. Oh, because it's 2002,
yes.
So it goes above. It doesn't
right.
go alphabetically by
it,
this.
It goes first the name, then the letters of the initials of the first name, then the year, then the alphabetical title.
I think that's also a relic. And then one more thing, because I think I just have these.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Should these be justified? I thought they're
some people did it with on the left, some people did in the center. Actually, the correct is the center. For this particular paper,
okay.
But I didn't mark anybody else's if they left justified. So I let it go.
And then
you're really the one who's right.
And then I should have a title even for a treatment summary.
Yep.
Okay. And then can I just say client description, or do you want me to break it into demographics?
Break it into.
Okay. All right, I'll send this to you this weekend.
Thank you. You're the only one I asked to. Advisory submit for next year. So.
I'm really glad that you. I'm really
you
glad
give us
that
the
you
top
like
paper.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad that you like it. I worked hard, especially on the. I was trying to get to know the terminology around speech patterns, and so I was talking to some of my friends that are speech pathologists or in school, which was a nice opportunity to just chat. So
yeah.
I'll send